Last week, we left off on Daf Yud Beis Amud Beis, and we were in the last little section before the Mishnah at the bottom. And the Gemara here is talking about why is it that they chose the third parsha that we read, the parsha of Tzitzis, the parsha, the last little section of Parsha Shlach. Why was that chosen? And the consideration of actually adding other materials. So the Gemara is on the fourth medium width line in the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Abahu ben Zutarti, Amar Rabbi Yehuda ben Zvida. Bikshu l'kvoa parshas Balak b'kriyashma. They wanted to be koveya the parsha of Balak. Now, you don't have to worry, they weren't obviously, and Balak's a long parsha, but it obviously refers to a some section of Balak. They wanted to institute that with along with Kriyashma. Umitnei ma lo kiva'um. Why did they not kavua? Why did they not institute it? Mishum torach tzibur. Because it would have been a tircha de tzibur. Kriyashma is long enough as it is. We have three parshios, you know, some, I don't know, 20, 21 psukim or something like that. That's enough. To add more would have been a lot. Now, the question, of course, the Gemara is going to explore is why did they want to add Parshas Bilam? And based upon that, was there perhaps a compromise position available? So the Gemara says, my timer, why is it that they wanted to take Parshas Bilam and put it in Parshas a Balak and put it in there? And my assumption, by the way, when the Gemara is not going to make this explicit, it doesn't mean you needed to put, the Gemara is going to say they couldn't put only one pasuk in, and therefore they weren't going to put the whole parsha in. I assume when they mean the whole parsha, Parshas Balak, I think, is 104 psukim. I don't think that they meant that they were thinking about being koveya all 104 psukim, and it was an all or nothing deal. When you study Parshas Balak, and it's very clear from the Gemara's discussion, they were thinking about a certain piece of the poetry. There are actually four speeches of Bilam. There are the first three speeches when Balak thinks he's still going to get his money worth out of Bilam, and each time he fails. And then finally, Balak says, okay, very nice. I see. I wanted to honor you, but God obviously doesn't want to honor you, mocking and echoing Bilam's comments when he first came to Balak. And then Bilam gives a final speech, mostly focused on the future of the world, future generations. So presumably, the Gemara was only speaking about one speech. In other words, they could have taken one speech of Bilam, and they could have inserted that into Kriyashma, except for that would have added four, five, six, seven, eight psukim. It would have been, again, a substantial chunk, and they didn't want to do that. But now the Gemara asks, my timer, why is it that, what did they find somewhere in Parshas Balak, in the speeches of Bilam, that they thought was so incorporate that would have been so relevant to incorporate into Kriyashma? So, mishum kel mitzrayim, that God was the one who took him out of Egypt. Now, of course, we have already mitzrayim in our parsha of Tzitzis. So if that's what's so special, then the Gemara says lema parshas ribis or parshas mishkalos. There are plenty of parshios. There are plenty of parshios that speak about God having taken us out of Egypt and as giving us a rationale for the mitzvah. Now, I want to qualify because I'm going to talk about this a little bit later. There are two kinds of mentions of Egypt in mitzvos. There are many mitzvos where the Torah describes it, ki ani Hashem hamaleh eschem eretz Mitzrayim, or ani Hashem lo kecham asher hotzeisi eschem eretz Mitzrayim, where the rationale that's offered of Yetzias Mitzrayim is not why this particular mitzvah. It's not the logic of Yetzias Mitzrayim means therefore it makes sense that we should do this mitzvah. In those cases, God is simply telling us, you might not like this mitzvah. It might be difficult. Maybe me, yes, maybe no. You keep the mitzvah because you owe me, because I took you out of Egypt. I own you. That's one type. There is a second kind, which I'm going to hold off talking about till we get to the next Mishnah, which is something very different, which is a mitzvah whose purpose is that we should remember. In other words, it's inherently tied to the fact, not that God owns us, But our experience in slavery, our experience in the servitude in Egypt and the process of the Exodus, that's why this mitzvah is fundamentally connected to that. And I want to talk about it because I think it's one of the most central values of the Torah. But right now, the Gemara is not talking about a particular mitzvah where the content is because we were slaves in Egypt and God redeemed us. But rather, in fact, the Parshas Bilam is not at all about that. It's poetic speech. You know, all the good things God does for the Jewish people is going to do for them. He blesses them and so on. So here, when you look at Parshas Ribis, say the fact that you don't take Ribis is not because we were slaves in Egypt. You don't take Ribis because God told us not to. And you say, well, not taking interest is very hard. It interferes with our lives. It interferes with what we would like to do economically. Doesn't matter because God says, I own you. I took you out of Egypt. Right. If I'm not sure what somebody would have thought about cheating in business, although unfortunately there are lots of people, including lots of Jews, and unfortunately even lots of from Jews who think it's a mitzvah to cheat in business. So the Torah believes otherwise. The Parsha of Mishkalos, where the Torah insists that our weights and measures be precise and we not cheat even the slightest amount, again, is there's a mention of Egypt. But it's not that the rationale for why the mitzvah is because we were slaves in Egypt. And presumably in that case, it's pretty obvious though why you're not allowed to cheat in weights and measures. So the Torah says, so the Gemara says, why didn't they choose Parshas Ribis or Parshas Mishkalos of weights and measures? The Chsibam Yetzias Mitzrayim. Ela Amar Rabbi Yose Bar Avin. The reason why they wanted to include Parshas Bala is Mishum Dechsiv Ba Haikra. Kara Shachav Ka'ari Uchalavi Miyakimenu. Now, the pasuk literally means that the Jewish people, after conquering their enemies, they crouch down and rest and lie like a lion. An Ari is a male lion, and Uchalavi, and like a lioness, Miyakimenu. Who will bother to disturb them? Who will make them get up? The lion goes to sleep, everybody leaves the lion or the lioness alone. Now, why do they want to put this in Kriya Shema? Because you have Shchiva and you have Kima, which are the times of Vashach B'chav Kumecha. So sort of to invoke the Jewish story, the Jewish history, Jewish aspirations. So we would have wanted to include this pasuk in Kriya Shema. So the Gemara asks, Vilema Haipsuka Vitulo. Okay, so, I mean, you know, everybody complains when we add something to davening. Every time we have a new thing. But here, it's not even a whole capital of Tehillim. It's just like one pasuk. So why didn't they just add that pasuk? So here the Gemara says something very interesting. Gemiri, we have a tradition, kol parsha de paske Moshe Rabbeinu paskinan, de lo paska Moshe Rabbeinu lo paskinan. This is a very, very interesting rule that the Gemara has here. The idea that if the Torah presented, if Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have a parsha break there, or if Moshe Rabbeinu didn't present us with the parsha break, Chazal elsewhere certainly assume Moshe Rabbeinu didn't, he was not the one who's responsible for the parsha breaks. The reason why the Medrash says, I think Rashi quotes this at the beginning of Sefer Vayikra, the reason why there are parsha breaks on the Torah is because Moshe Rabbeinu needed a break to digest the material. God gave him the breaks, right? Because he didn't want to overwhelm Moshe Rabbeinu with all the material, so he took little recesses. And that's what the parshios are in the Torah. That's what those, not what we call the Sedra, but the actual, the Peis and the Samachs, the Psuchos and the Stumos, that's what it's for. But anything that Moshe Rabbeinu was given a parsha break and transmitted it to us, so then we keep an entire parsha intact. If not, then we don't break up a parsha. The Gemara has a similar principle elsewhere, which comes up every month, just about every month. Not if Rosh Chodesh is only on Shabbos, but it's going to come up this week, which is the Gemara has a rule called Psuka de lo paske Moshe Rabbeinu ana lo paskinan. If there's no pasuk break in the Torah, if a pasuk is whole, we don't break up a pasuk either. That's what the Gemara says, and once in Megillah, once in Tainis. And it's the reason this issue comes up is because we have a problem on Thursday. Thursday will be Rosh Chodesh, and we have to lane, and we take out the Sefer Torah, and we roll it to Parshas Pinchas. And the problem is that we need to get four aliyos on Rosh Chodesh. That's what the Mishnah says, that your current arba, you lo posim lo mosifin, you can't have fewer, you can't have more. The problem is we only have 15 psukim in the parasha of Rosh Chodesh, in Savis B'nai Yisrael, all the way to the end of actual Rosh Chodesh, Usiri Zimechad L'chatas L'Hashem, etc. So the question is, well, that's not a problem. You only need three psukim for each aliyah. So 12 divided by 4, you can even have a remainder. So you can have a few of the aliyahs, can have an extra pasuk. So that's not the problem. What the problem is the following. There's a rule when you have an aliyah break. You know, our aliyah breaks, normally you look in the Chumash, it tells you where you break the aliyah. The reality is, in almost every parsha, with fundamentally one or maybe two exceptions, you can
With
break the
big threes?
aliyos for, what's that?
Within three, not
Sometimes I'm
within
getting
three.
there. So the one rule is you cannot break a pasuk. You cannot create an aliyah break unless either you are at a parsha break of stuma or psucha, or there are at least three psukim between you and the parsha break. So that's the general rule. So our aliyos, I don't even know. I probably said this before, and I know I've taught this many times, not in our shir here. I don't know where the aliyah breaks originate from. In other words, they're almost standardized, but they're in our printed editions, but I don't know actually who created them. But I know what the rules are. And if you wanted to change your aliyah break, so when you want to make hosafos, right? At KJ, you'll make hosafos. So there are rules to how you make hosafos, but the primary rule is that you're not allowed to break. You can't create a break when there's two or one psukim from where you stop to a parsha break, unless you are actually at a parsha break. So what's the problem? The problem, Rosh Chodesh, is as follows. The laning that we read has three parts. It has eight psukim, which deal with the Karban Tamid Shel Shachar Tamid Shel Bein Arbaim, the daily Ola offering that was brought morning and afternoon in the Beis HaMikdash. Eight psukim. Then there are two psukim over Yom HaShabbos, the Musaf of Shabbos, and then there are five psukim, the Musaf of Rosh Chodesh. So the question is, how do you get four aliyos out of this? Without stopping within three psukim, or starting, you can't start or stop within three psukim of a parsha break on either end.
Repeat a
So,
verse.
what's that?
You repeat one of the verses.
But here's the problem. So you start, we run into a problem, even though we repeat, before we get there. So naturally you would say, well, you have a parsha of eight psukim. The only way to deal with it is to break it up into two. Fine, we have two aliyos now. The problem is that the next parsha is only two psukim. That's not enough. Every ola has to read at least three psukim. So you could read those two psukim, but then whatever you, even if you read into the next, the parsha of Rosh Chodesh, you either read two psukim or three psukim, and you're stopping in the wrong place. So so the truth is, there is no way of getting around that problem on that end. So what do we do? So the truth is, the Gemara presents a machlokas in Maseches Megillah between Rav and Shmuel. One says posek, and one says doleg. One says that you actually split the pasuk up in the middle, and the other one says that you actually repeat a pasuk. Now, according to now, so the, what we end up doing, although it still theoretically runs afoul of the rule, we are is we read the first, second, and third pasuk of Perek Chavches, then we go back and we repeat the third pasuk and we read three, four, and five. So the only problem there is that we're starting within two psukim of a parsha break. There's nothing we can do about that. There's no way to avoid that. And then someone reads six, seven, eight plus the two psukim of Shabbos, and someone reads the five psukim of Rosh Chodesh. So the Gemara there raises this has the discussion. Why does the so we don't do we are not posek. What posek means is that you read two and a half psukim as three, and then you read another two and a half psukim. But we don't do that. We do three, and then we repeat one and do two. So why is it that we do what we do? So the answer, Gemara says, that the position that says doleg, that you repeat a pasuk, is kol pasuk de lo paske Moshe Rabbeinu anan lo paskina. That's what the Gemara says. The truth is, this klal is, I don't want to say it's an artificial rule, but it's not a rule that was held by everybody. The Gemara in Kiddushin on Daf Lamed Aleph comments that the vav of the word gachon, Kol Holech al Gachon in Parsha Shmini, is the middle letter in the Torah. It's the middle letter. Now, the Gemara asks a question there. The Gemara assumes that there are an even number of letters in the Torah, not an odd number of letters. So the Gemara says, is it the first letter of the second half or the last letter of the first half? To which the Gemara says, well, we don't know. So the Gemara asks, well, why don't you go take out a Sefer Torah and count the letters? So, you know, in some historical periods, you know, people watch three football games in a day to spend their day, and some people would spend their day reading through the entire Torah, counting the letters. So the Gemara wants to know why not do that, and the Gemara's answer is Anan lo baki b'chaseiros v'yaseiros. We're not sure about our text exactly either how you count letters or whether our texts are perfect. It's not clear what the Gemara's comment is. Then the Gemara says, identifies, I believe it's for Hiskalach in Parshas Tazria, I might be wrong about that, is the middle Pasuk in the Torah. So the Gemara asks the same question on the assumption that there are an even number of Pesukim in the Torah, which I think there are in our Sefer Torah, but it depends how you count certain Pasuk Bams and Pasuks. So the Gemara says, is it the first Pasuk of the second half, last Pasuk of the first half? So the Gemara says, and if don't tell me you don't know how to count Pesukim. So the Gemara ends up saying, actually, we don't know how to count Pesukim. And they mention a Pasuk in Parshas Yisro that Bimaraba, in Eretz Yisrael, they would break this Pasuk up into three different Pesukim. So at least that Gemara would suggest that not everybody held to this hard and fast rule that you can't break up. If Moshe Rabbeinu didn't break a Pasuk up, then we can't break it up. And in fact, I haven't had the chance to go back and bother certain people, but I remember Rav Schechter quoting something from the Vilna Gaon about Pesukim et Esnachta and dividing things. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I think it was in the spirit of maybe the idea of Kopasit de Lopaske Mesh Rabbeinu is not absolute.
Anyway, the Grud does do it differently on Rosh Chodesh.
What's that?
The Grud does do it differently on Rosh Chodesh.
Yes, but I don't think that he splits the Pasuk into
two. No, I don't think so.
No, it's a different repetition scheme. Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara continues and says, Parshas Tzitzis, that may not kavua. Why would they kill Veya Parshas Tzitzis in Kriya Shema? So the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Yehuda bar Chaviva, nay, sheyeshba." Our Gemara text that I assume you have in front of you reads Chamisha Dvarim. On the side, they note that some have Shisha Dvarim because the Gemara is actually going to list six things. If you want to retain the version that says Chamisha, you're going to have to argue that two of the six things that the Gemara said are going to enumerate. The Gemara is going to enumerate are fundamentally the same thing. It's not clear to me how easy it is to pick which two, but we'll read on and see. So the Gemara says, "Neisha yeshba chamisha or shisha dvarim, mitzvas tzitzis, yitzias mitzrayim, all mitzvos, vasisem es kol mitzvosai, and vidaas minim, warning against heresy, hirhor avera." Cautioning a person against lewd thoughts, and then hear her avodah zarah, cautioning a person against not heretical thoughts, but idolatrous thoughts. So the Gemara says first, Bishlama hanitlas mefarshim. The first three are easy to find. O mitzvos dichsiv, urisemoso, uzchartemis kol mitzvos Hashem. Tzitzis dichsiv vasulahem tzitzis. And yitzias mitzrayim dichsiv asher otzesia, ani Hashem elkoichem asher otzesia eschem eretz mitzrayim lios lachem lelokim. Ela da'as minin, hirhur haveira v'hirhur avodah zarah. Those three, minalan. Where do we find them? Where do we find them mentioned? So the Gemara says, "D'tanya." I'll quote from the beginning of the pasuk: "V'lo sasuru acharei levavchem." You shouldn't stray after your hearts, or your heart, you plural. Zo minus. It means the lave is the seat of intellectual thought for the Gemara. I know we would not see it that way, but that's in a biblical metaphor. So thoughts of heresy, one has to not stray after. The chain who omer, omar navol bilibo ein Elohim. The vile one says in his heart that there is no God. Denying the existence of God is not avodah zarah, it's heresy. Okay, and then... Acharei einichem, straying after your eyes, zehirhur avera. That is having lewd thoughts of arayos. Shenemar, vayomer Shimshon el aviv, osa kachli, ki hi yashua veinai. Shimshon fell in love with the non-Jewish Philistine girl, and he said to his father, she's the one I want to marry, she's the one who is good in my eyes. So that's acharei einichem. And finally, asher atem zonim, Zehirhur avodah zarah. Znus is a metaphor that's used commonly in Nach, and as adultery is used commonly as a metaphor for avodah zarah. because the relationship between God and the Jewish people is often described as the relationship between a husband and wife, and for a wife to commit adultery, znus. So in the context of the Jewish people and God, so the Jewish people to worship avodah zarah constitutes an analog to adultery. That's why it's asher atem zonim achareihem. The chenu omer. They quote the pasuk, and there could have been many pesukim I assume quoted. Vayiznu acharei habe'olim. They went astray after the Baal. So that's what the Gemara says. This is the reason why there are so many major themes that we hit upon in the parsha of Tzitzis. That's why they included that in Kriyashma. So that's what the Gemara says. Okay. Now, I think it's just worth thinking about for a moment. Kriyashma involves three mitzvos. It involves Kabbalas al Malchus Shamayim, the acceptance of the yoke of heaven. It involves the mitzvah of Kriya, of reading. And then it might also obviously fulfill the obligation of Talmud Torah. As far as the latter two mitzvos are concerned, it's not entirely clear which parshios had to be read. Obviously, Shema or something the equivalent of Shema has to be there, because the theme of Kabbalas al Malchus Shamayim, accepting the yoke of heaven, has to be something that is sort of embedded or embodied in the psukim that are selected. But the Gemara assumes that there could have been an alternate selection, perhaps, of the third parsha, and the Gemara doesn't talk about it as the second parsha, but one wonders, even if the second parsha, theoretically, there could have been something else as well. But the Gemara says they chose as the third parsha, the parsha of Tzitzis, because of all these major themes that the parsha touches upon. Okay. The Mishnah now begins. It's a very familiar Mishnah to most of us, because it's quoted in the Haggadah. The Mishnah starts out by stating, Maskiv and Yetzias Mitzrayim Balelos. We have to mention, or I don't know if that's the good way of formulating it. I always used to think it means that one is obligated to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim Balelos. Interestingly enough, if you look on the little letter Gimel on the word Maskirin, which points you to the Emishpat Ner Mitzvah, you'll notice something interesting, which is normally there would be three references that you would expect to be quoted in the Emishpat Ner Mitzvah. The Emishpat Ner Mitzvah is kind of the footnote system to tell you where this law is quoted as the halacha. And there are basically three svarim that are generally used. The Rambam, the Smag, the Sefer Mitzvah Skedolos, and the Turin Shulchan Aruch. But if you look in letter Gimel, in the Emishpat Ner Mitzvah, there's only mention in the Rambam. The Rush and the Riff, for some reason, not entirely clear, although I have some thoughts, do not mention Maskirin Yetzias Mitzrayim Balelos. Make no mistake, the Rush and the Riff said all three parshios, both during the day and at night. But here the Mishnah states that you're supposed to be Maskirin Yetzias Mitzrayim Balelos. Now these four words, I believe, are not in the Haggadah, but it's the rest of the Mishnah that I think all of us, or almost all of us, will recognize, which is Rabbi Lassa ben Azayir's statement. The possibility has occurred to me, it has occurred to me that it is possible that there is not a strict chiyuv of Maskir Yetzias Mitzrayim Balelos, and I'll tell you why. I haven't looked at the shir in a very long time. Rabbi Lukstein probably will remember the shir. The rabbi, I believe, in the shir Mazecha Abba Marizal, has a long shir about the difference between Sipa Yetzias Mitzrayim, which we only do one night a year, and Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, which we do every day and every night. If I'm not mistaken, the Rambam doesn't quote a mitzvah in the Minyan HaMitzvos of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. He only quotes Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. I don't remember what the Rav may have done with that. But a very simple answer on the surface is that it's not a strict obligation, midaraisa, according to everybody at least, to mention Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. There's an idea. It's an important theme. Chazal felt it was important to incorporate it into our tefillah, and they chose to incorporate it when we say Kriyashma. But perhaps it's not a strict obligation, and hence it's not counted as a mitzvah. If I'm not mistaken, in the shir, the Rav, I imagine, would have found that the mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim is a subset of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. But I'm not sure that is the only way of understanding things. But be it as it may, Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Harei Ani Kiven Shivim Shana, So Elazar ben Azariah said, I was around 70, Kiven Shivim Shana. I'm sure many of you are familiar with the Gemara's comment. I believe it's in the fourth parak in our Masechta. What does it mean he was like 70? So the Gemara says he wasn't actually like 70. He was like 18 years old. He was 18 years old, but it was when Rabbi Gamliel was being thrown out of, was being deposed as Nasi, and they were trying to figure out who should they appoint in his stead. And they didn't want to appoint Rabbi Yoshua because he was the one who brought about the whole thing, even if it wasn't his fault. And they didn't want to appoint Rabbi Akiva because he didn't have Zchus Avos. He was, you know, he was not so far removed from Gerim, and therefore they're afraid Rabbi Gamliel would curse him and he wouldn't have a defense against the curse. So they wanted to choose Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah because he was not Siri Le Ezra. He was wealthy. He was the perfect person. So he went and he asked his wife, "What do you think I should do?" That's a self-important muster. She wasn't so keen on the idea, but one of the things I think she pointed out is that, you know, you got nothing. You know, you look like a young person in your beard. So that night, I think miraculously his beard turned white, and that's what it means. Hare ani kiven shivim shana. Okay. So anyway. Sayyur says, Areani Kiven Shimon Shana, and I wasn't Zocha that Yetzias Mitzrayim should be recited at night, meaning, presumably, to establish that it was a Din Doraisa. Ad Shidrasha Ben Zoma. And Ben Zoma interpreted Shenemar, Laman Tiskoris Yom Tzeischa Me'eretz Mitzrayim, Ko Yemei Chayecha. Yemei Chayecha Hayomim, Ko Yemei Chayecha Halelos. So he interprets Yemei Chayecha are the days, literally the days of your life, Ko Yemei Chayecha, all. Kol is an extra word. It's a riboy. It's something that is used to sort of include more things within the framework of a particular law. And therefore, kol yemei chayecha includes the leilos. V'chachamim omrim, yemei chayecha olam hazeh, kol lahavi limos hamashiach. So they agree that kol should be interpreted as a riboy, as something to add on. But to tell us that not only is there a mitzvah zechir etzias mitzrayim, or an idea of being Zocher Yetzias Mitzrayim in our era, but even in the Messianic era. Now, I will note, by the way, that if one were to regard Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim as a real mitzvah, then the Chachamim's position would be virtual heresy in a Maimonidean framework. In the Rambam's framework, and I don't think this is a radical position, for the Rambam, following the tradition of Shmuel, that the Messianic era is not fundamentally different than the world in which we live, other than there is peace in the world. We are not subservient to anybody else. All of the mitzvos, every one of the 613 mitzvos applies equally in the Messianic era as it does today. To suggest otherwise for the Rambam is heresy. It violates one of the 13 principles of faith, that no mitzvah of the Torah can be done away with. So it's very strange if Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim is a mitzvah, that the Chachamim need a pasuk to tell you, Kol Yemei Chayecha, L'Rabos Limos HaMashiach. There may be a way of getting around that, a different way of getting around that, but the simple answer to the question is that if Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim is not strictly a mitzvah, but it's a kind of an idea that Chazal thought that we need to sort of remind ourselves and we need to have our liturgy incorporate that, so then I understand why, you know, it may not be a real drush anyway, because if it's not really a strict obligation, but I understand more easily why you might tell us that it's relevant in Messianic era as well, as we'll see in the Gemara's discussion.
I once asked Rav Shachter if the Indian of Zechir is separate from Kriya Shema as far as the Zman, whether it's the same Zman as Kriya Shema or just during the day or whatever, but I don't remember what he said.
So I will tell you this, that Zechira, if we assume Yom and Laila, you'll see that the Achronim assume, I don't know if the Mechaber already says it in Shulchan Aruch, that even if let's say you said Kriya Shema after Shkia, and now you're coming to repeat later after Tzeis HaKochavim, so there are many who hold you don't have to repeat the third Parsha, that for the purposes of Zechi Yetzias Mitzrayim Balelos, it's close enough tonight that it doesn't matter. It's different than the other two Parshias. That you'll see. It's not in the Shulchan Aruch, it's in the Mishnah Berurah. Okay, but I want to step back just for one moment and talk about this idea of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. And I want to propose a radical idea that I don't think I've ever said in the context of the shir, but I'm going to ask a question. And you know, when I often ask a question, I'm looking for someone. I'm trapping you. David certainly spent a long time in my shir as a student in yeshiva. So, you know, sometimes I ask a question and I know that I expect you're going to give me the wrong answer because we all assume the wrong answer. There are two different reasons given in the two Aseres HaDibros for why we keep Shabbos. What are the two reasons?
One is Zecher L'Maaseh Breishis, and the other one is Zecher L'Yetzias Mitzrayim.
So if I were grading
L'Avdus Mitzrayim.
If I were grading your Bechina, I would give you a 50. Now, okay. The person who created the Nusach of our Kiddush agrees with you, but I strongly disagree. And I would posit, and I think if you read most of the Rishonim, most of the Parshanim in Parshas Vayeshanan, the Torah does not say that we keep Shabbos as Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim. The Torah tells us why we keep Shabbos. The Torah says, Lema'an Yanuach Abdecha V'Amascha Kamocha. The reason we keep Shabbos is because if we don't, those who work for us are not going to, they're not going to have any rest. And if you'll say, hey, listen, why should my maidservant and manservant have rest? They belong to me. They do whatever I want them to do. The answer is, you remember what it was like for you to be in the position where you were subservient to others and how bad that was. So when now you have people who are subservient to you, remember how you have to treat them. Now, the reason why I think this is so significant is because perhaps, with the exception of the pasuk that the Mishnah just quoted, and the truth is, the Mishnah, it's very interesting. The pasuk that the Mishnah quotes doesn't tell us that we have to be Zocha Yetzias Mitzrayim. That pasuk is in the Parsha Hamoados, the section that deals with the festivals in Parsha Re'e that we read always in Chutz La'aretz, the last day of Yom Tov. It's a part of Kol HaBachor. And there the Torah says, we bring the Korban Pesach, I understand. If I were in the Beis HaMikdash and I were bringing the Korban Pesach, I would think, this is what my ancestors did in Egypt. There's not a commandment, v'zochar toki ever ayisa. It's l'man tizkor. You do the Korban Pesach because you know what's going to happen? That way you'll remember. Every time, I believe every single time the Torah tells us, not I am God who took you out of Egypt, so you owe me. Every time the Torah says, v'zochar to ki ever ayisa b'eretz Mitzrayim, it's about what we term in the popular terms now, it's about social justice. It's about the treatment of the vulnerable, of the poor. I think the term v'zachar ta, with a command to remember Egypt, I think it's about five times, everyone in Sefer Dvarim. One is in the Aseres HaDibros, and the other four, if I'm not mistaken, at least three of them are when it comes to matnos anim, things that you leave in your field, or when you're free, when you're slave, your eved ivri goes free. I think those are the contexts in which the Torah says, you have to remember you were a slave in Egypt. You were vulnerable. You were the downtrodden. And that's why you do this mitzvah. You leave the gleanings of your field. When you send your Eved and Shivcha free, your Eved Ivri, your Shivcha, and your Amma Ivriya free, you have to do the mitzvah Hanukkah. You have to give them gifts. Why? They worked for me. I paid them. I bought them when they came in. That was the terms of service. The answer is when we went out of Mitzrayim, God loaded us up also with gifts, right? We read about it already. We were told about it in yesterday's Kriyas HaTorah that one of the first things that God told Moshe Rabbeinu was, you know, you're going to leave. You're not going to leave empty-handed. That said, you're going to have all this money you're going to take with you. God performed the mitzvah of Hanukkah for us because otherwise we would have left Egypt with nothing. So that's, I think, the reason why Rabbi Loza ben Azariah, what is he jumping for joy for? Okay, so you have a mitzvah, Zechias, Itzias, or Trayim, Balelos. You know, there's a machlokas whether Lailos, Man Tzitzis, or not. Whether we hold that it's not. But there's a machlokas in the Gemara, actually, whether you're supposed to wear, whether it's dependent upon the time of day or just the nature of the garment itself. But the bottom line is that if somebody, you know, figured out that the mitzvah tzitzis, it applies at night too. If you're wearing a day bag, and it's like, it's such an amazing, I mean, it's nice to have more mitzvos, but why was he, there's a lifelong pursuit of Rabbi Loza ben Azariah. I think the answer is because v'zachar taki ever ayisa b'eretz Mitzrayim is a central tenet of Torah, which underlies any number of halachos which dictate the kind of society we strive to construct. Okay, whether or not one, that's why Lazem Nazari was so happy, I do think it's important to note when you read the Aseret HaDibros, what Rabbi Lukstein suggested, Zecher L'Tzias Mitzrayim, is what the author, whoever was Mechaber our Kiddush, does say that and says it about the Yom Tovim as well. The Torah doesn't say that anywhere, as best as I can tell. But, you know, to parrot Ibn Ezra here, Rechava Dato Midati, his wisdom, whoever composed our Kiddush is greater than my wisdom. But when I read Chumash, I don't quite see it there. Okay, so now the Gemara goes to explore what exactly, what's going on with Rabbi Lazar and Azari and the Chacham. So the Gemara quotes a Braisa, which I believe is actually from our Tosefta. Tanya, Amar Lahem Ben Zoma Lachachamim. Is there a mitzvah of remembering Yitzias Mitzrayim in the Messianic era? This is from Sefer Yirmiyahu. There will be days that will come, says God. They will no longer say, Chai Hashem, Asher Helas B'nei Yisrael Meretz Mitzrayim. No one will say, oh, you know, I swear by the God who took the Jewish people out of Egypt. Ki im Chai Hashem Asher Helas. Rather, they will swear by the God who brought the Jewish people back and all of Zera Beis Israel from the northern lands, from all the lands to which I scattered the Jewish people. So you see, we're no longer going to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, once again, the question
I usually mention that at the Second Coast. Since we have Kibbutz Galios Meretz Tzafon already.
Okay. So the Gemara, the question begs itself, forget the Gemara's discussion. If Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim is a mitzvah, and it's a mitzvah midaraisa, how can Yirmiyahu Navi abolish it? Now, there are several ways of approaching this. The most lumdish way of approaching this is to make what I would say is a slightly radical claim, according to Ben Zoma at least, which is that the mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Torah describes a mitzvah of remembering that we left Egypt. But the mitzvah really isn't remembering that we left Egypt. It's a mitzvah of remembering that God redeemed us from exile. Which exile do you have to mention? Well, in the Torah, because the most recent exile was that of Galus Mitzrayim, therefore, you mentioned the most recent galus. But should there come a time in which the most recent exile from which the Jewish people were redeemed is no longer galus Mitzrayim, but it's galus Babel or galus Edom or whatever the galus was, so that's the galus you're supposed to mention, meaning the mitzvah doesn't change. The mitzvah is always remembering the last redemption that God has done for us, and the only question is, which is the last redemption? That's the best way I can explain. If you want to stick to the standard version that it's a strictly mitzvah chayubis, a straight obligation to be mentioned in Yetzias Mitzrayim, I don't know how else you could explain Ben Zoma's position here. Now, if you assume that it's not strictly a strict mitzvah, but of more value and a principle, so then I understand. Then it's easy to make that leap. That, you know, it's one thing to think about Mitzrayim, but you know that was our ancestors. But we have just been saved from, you know, our own personal exile. And maybe that's, of course, makes more sense for us to be grateful to God for. The simple explanation of the pasuk, by the way, is none of these. The simple explanation is that this is not whether or not there's a mitzvah Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. The bottom line is that when we talk about, when we think about viscerally our relationship with God and what the goodness that he has done to us in the past 100 years, you know, I should say what he's done for us. We think, many of us think about Hakama Samadina. We think about the establishment of the state because it happened in our lifetime or shortly before our lifetime, you know, where even the existence, the precariousness of the state, which thank God feels much less precarious now, but certainly 40 or 50 years ago or 30 years ago felt more precarious. So we have a much more personal connection, a personal relationship. So if we're going to be talking about Nisim and Niflaus, we're not going to really be talking about Nisim and Niflaus, what happened in Egypt, because those are stories of our past. So of course, when we do Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim on Lo Pesach, that's what we do. But what we live with viscerally, our own personal emotional perspectives, is obviously going to relate to the redemption that speaks more to us, which is the more recent redemption. So all it means here is that when a Jew swears, assuming he swears, and assuming he swears by God, and assuming he swears by God who did such and such for us, most Jews are going to swear by the redemption from the exile to Babel in the northern lands rather than to Egypt, because that's the one that is going to be much closer to them historically. And in fact, the Pshat and the Pasuk, this is not a statement about us, that we will swear by the ingathering from Babel in the northern lands. And what Yirmiyahu was telling the Jewish people was, don't worry, God is going to redeem you. There's going to be a generation that instead of swearing by the God who took us out of Egypt, is going to swear by the God who took us out of Babel, because there's going to be a generation that comes out of Babel. Anyway, but that's what Ben Zoma says to the Chachamim. He says, how can you say there's going to be Zechira Yitzias Mitzrayim in the Messianic era? Zechira Yitzias Mitzrayim is supplanted by Zechira Yitzias Babel. So now the Chachamim respond, Amrulo, second line from the bottom of the page, Lo Sheteoke Yitzias Mitzrayim Im Koma, Ela Shetehe Shibud Malchios Ikar, V'Yitzias Mitzrayim Tofela. It's not that there's not going to be Zechira Yitzias Mitzrayim, it's just that it is going to be a secondary, in our perspective, to Zechiras HaGeulah of Bavel. But it's not that it's not that they're not going to talk about it at all. It's just going to pale in comparison. And Kayotse Boata Omer, Lo Yikare Shimcha Od Yaakov, Ki Im Yisrael Yeshemecha. God appears to Yaakov in Parshas Vayishlach, and he tells him, your name will no longer be called Jacob, it will be called Israel. So lo sheyakir, the top of your gimel amid aleph, lo sheyakir Yaakov bimkomo, it's not that the name Yaakov is gone, Ela Yisrael Ikar, the Yaakov Tafela. Yisrael will be the primary name, and Yaakov will be secondary name. We might say that the Jewish people are not called Bnei Yaakov, we're called Bnei Yisrael. The chein hu omer, and the pasuk reminds us of this, al tiskeru rishonos, v'kadmonios al tisbononu. This goes back to Yitzias Mitzrayim, the exodus from Egypt versus the future redemption or later redemption. Don't mention the earlier ones and the things that came before, don't think about. Altiz Kuru Rishonos, Zeshibud Malchios. That is the enslavement to the, I guess, the earlier kingdoms. V'kadmonios al-Tisbonanu, Zo Yitzias Mitzrayim. That is the exodus from Egypt. I am going to do something new, God says. Atos itzmach, now it is going to sprout. What is this? Tani Rab Yosef, zo milchemes gog umagog. In other words, the eschaton, in the end of days, when the final battle and the final redemption, all our earlier redemptions we're not going to remember. We're going to think about the salvation in, from the war of gog umagog. And now the Gemara gives an analogy. Mashal l'maha davar doma. What is this similar to? La'adam shayahat mahalech baderach. A person was hiking. Upaga bo zeif, and he runs into a wolf. V'nitzal mimenu. He was saved from the wolf. V'hayim esaper v'holech maaseh zeif. He's busy telling people about the wolf. Next time he goes hiking. I wouldn't go hiking with this guy, by the way. But paga bo ari. He runs into a lion. V'nitzal mimenu. He was saved from the jaws of the lion. And then what happens? He stops talking about the salvation from the teeth of the wolf, and instead he talks about being saved from the teeth of the lion. And finally, paga bonachash. I never run into a wolf or a lion while hiking. I have run into snakes while hiking. Paga bonachash. V'nitzal mimenu. Shachach maseh shneim. He forgets about the first two. So af koi af kach Yisrael. Same thing with the Jewish people. Tzaros achronos. Mishakos es harishonos. The later tzaros make us forget about the earlier tzaros. We have an expression Chazal like to use. In fact, Rashi quoted on this week's parsha. Moshe asked God, he said, when they asked me who sent them, what should I say? So God says to Moshe, Ehayah asher ehayah. So Rashi quoting the Medrash explains that just like I would be with them in the trials and tribulations of Egypt and redeem them, I will be with them in all the future trials and tribulations as well. And Moshe says to God, you know, it's enough that they're dealing with what they're dealing with now. You don't have to tell them they're going to be redeemed from Egypt. And then later they're going to once again suffer in exile and then you redeem them. And God says to Moshe, you're right. Kosamar al b'nei Yisrael. So in the same sense, Daya Tzar B'Shaitis, we don't focus on the tzaros that haven't yet befallen us. We also don't, Daya Tzar B'Shaitis, we focus on the one that we've just escaped from, and we forget about the ones that come before. That's what the Gemara says here. Okay. The Gemara now closes with what is, I think, a very, very enigmatic passage. And the reason it's here is because of the pasuk that the Tosefta quoted, that the Braisa quoted, as an analog to Egypt and future redemptions of Yaakov and Yisrael. And because of that, the Gemara has this discussion. It's a discussion worth thinking about. What's the point in the Gemara? But there is a beautiful, well, he starts it, and I'm going to finish it. And I think Rabbi Lookstein is going to appreciate this. It's a very powerful message that Rabbeinu Nissim Gon offers in his comments about this Gemara. Rabbeinu Nissim Gon is, we have on a very few Masechtas. He was one of the very late Gaonim, but we have him only on a few Masechtas, his Perush on the Gemara. And in at least my Gemara, and I think most Shasim, it's printed on this page, the left side of the page. The Gemara says the following: Avram hu Avraham, which means literally the fellow that you see referred to as Avram, that's by the same guy whose name is Avraham. Now, many of us know this because we learn Parshas Lech Lecha, and God tells him that he's going to change his name. It happens to be, this is a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, Avram hu Avraham, to make sure that everybody's on the same page. We don't think there are two different people. Such things do happen. So those who know me, those who are my personal friends know me, call me by my middle name. That's what my parents call me by. However, I have a first legal name. My initials share that of KJ, Kenneth Jeremy. So I remember there's been more than one occasion where there were people who were debating whether Kenneth Weider and Jeremy Weider were the same person. So the truth is, it would have been nice if there were a pasuk that said, you know, that we're one and the same person. So anyway, so Avram hu Avraham. Now the Gemara explains what's the significance of the two names. But Chila Nase Avla Aram. Originally, he was only a patriarch for the land of Aram. Ulebesof Nase Av L'chol HaOlam Kulo. He then became Avraham Av Hamon Goyim. He was a patriarch for all of humanity. Then the Gemara says, Sarai Hi Sarah, which is kind of interesting because if I looked at this Gemara in a vacuum, I might say, oh, there's a pasuk also, Sarai Hu Sarah. There is no pasuk anywhere.
And it's also Yiska. She had three names. Her maiden name was Yiska. Yeah.
That's in the Medrash. But in the Pshat, Sarai and Sarah were the same person. So Betchila Nases Sarai L'Umasa. Rashi says, I'm not sure about the grammar here. It's a Lashon Yachid. She was and princess is not the right word, but she was a matriarch, maybe is a better word, for her nation, Ulubasof Nases Sarah L'Chola Olam Kula. Okay, so that's an interpretation of what the distinction, why does God change their names? Because Avram and Sarah are now transformed, ironically, at the stage which allows them to create the Jewish people, but they are now transformed in the patriarch and matriarch of the entire universe. Maybe the reason is that that despite the fact that now they were going to have their own biological children, they were going to have Yitzchak, nonetheless, the message is that they still remain a patriarch and matriarch for humanity. Now the Gemara says the very puzzling part. Tony Bar Kapara, Kol HaKorei LeAvraham, Avram, Over Ba'aseh. Now, it's a very strange statement. It's very strange because does anybody you know go around, you know, I give a sermon this week's parasha, I'm going to refer to him as Avram. I'm going to the Maris HaMachpelah to visit today. Who's buried there? Avram? And Sarai, or it doesn't matter. We don't have a prohibition of calling her Sarai per se. I don't understand, and I don't know the answer to this question. Who goes around and calling Avram Avinu Avram? I know that you would think that it is prohibited to do so. You know, in Yiddish they do that. They call him Avrumi, right? They eliminate the hay. But I don't think that's what the Gemara meant. So I don't know what it means. And the Gemara says, Over Ba'aseh, first you violate a mitzvah saseh, Shenemar, V'hayashimcha Avraham. God says, your name shall be Abraham, not Abram. And Rabbi Lazar Omer, not only that, but you're over Balav. You violate a negative prohibition, Shenemar. V'lo yikarei od eshimcha Avram. Your name shall no longer be called Abram. So now the Gemara challenges. Elame'ata ha'korei l'sara sarai. Hachinami, you also violate a prohibition. So the Gemara says, no. Hasam kudsha brichu Omar li Avraham Sarai ishtechalosik rashima Sarai kisara shima. I'm not sure what that means, but Rashi doesn't comment. Maybe it means Avram wasn't allowed to call her anymore Sarai, but she was Sarah. But we can. Okay. Whereas Avram's is v'lo yikarei od shimcha. Avram, your name shall no longer be called by anybody. Whereas Sarai is Ishtecha lo sikra shema Sarai. You can't call her Sarai. Okay. Now the Gemara says, Elameata akore le Yaakov, Yaakov. Someone who calls, and this funny way of saying it, you should have said, Hakari li Yisrael Yaakov. If you call the third patriarch, you call him by his name, Jacob, Hachinami, because it says, V'lo yikare od shimcha Yaakov, kim Yisrael yeshemecha. So the Gemara says, no, shani hasam the hadar ahadrekra. The Torah, God, once again calls him Yaakov, dichsiv in Parshas Vayigash, vayomer elokim li Yisrael b'maros halayla, Vayomer Yaakov Yaakov. So apparently, God gave permission once again to call him Yaakov. The Gemara now closes the perek with a comment or a question. Mosif Rabbi Yosef Bar Abin, v'itamer Rabbi Yosef Bar Zvida. He asks the question that it can't be true that there's a prohibition of calling him Abraham, because the pasuk Nehemiah or Ezra, whoever wrote this part of Ezra Nehemiah, wrote Ata Hashem Elokim Asher Bacharta B'Avram. So when he wrote the Sefer, We put this book in Tanakh. How could we? He was an Avarion. He called Avram, Avram. So the Gemara says, no. Amar lehasam navi hu de kamisade de shifchei de rachmana might have an ekar. No. The whole point is that there is ato Hashem lekam asher bachart Avram, who would say, sumer akastim, visamto shimo Avraham. The whole point there was to retell the story that he was originally named Avram and you made him from just being a local patriarch into a universal patriarch. So that wasn't, in effect, denigrating Avram. That was praising God for changing Avram's name. But you're allowed to say, God, you changed his name from Avram to Avraham. Now, the question would be, if you were to learn the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvos, would you find anywhere in the Sefer Mitzvos that mitzvahs asei reish mem tes is that Avram must be called Avraham? And then mitzvahs los asei shin nun dalid is that kol hakore Avraham, b'shem Avram, is over belav. You don't get malchus because it's a lav sheim bo maisa. So I'll tell you right now that none of the monei ha-mitzvos count this as a prohibition. There is no mitzvah saseh of the 248. There's no mitzvah lo saseh of the 365. There is no asay or lo saseh about Avram's name. Now, the truth is, there is one place in the Sifrei Halacha it is quoted. There is a very, very long Magen Avraham and Simin Kuf Nun Vav in Orach Chaim. Simin Kuf Nun Vav is the last simin that deals with what you do as part of your Seder Hayom in the morning. Simin Kuf Nun Hei says, after you finish davening, you sit down and you do daf yomi. You learn a little bit. You kovea itim la Torah. And Simin Kuf Nun Vav says, after you kovea itim la Torah, you go out and earn a parnasa because kol Torah she'eni mamalacha sofa betela. That's it. In Simin Kuf Nun Vav, there's a very long Magen Avraham where he collects all of the laws that he thinks that the Shulchan Aruch omitted. Now, some of them are unquestionably correct. Nowhere does the Shulchan Aruch say that it's usher to speak Lashon Hara. Nowhere does the Shulchan Aruch say that there's a general mitzvah, v'hafta l'reacha kamocha. Nowhere does the Shulchan Aruch say that you're not allowed to take revenge from another Jew, lo sikom v'lo sitaras b'nei amecha. Nowhere does the Shulchan Aruch talk about the mitzvah, v'haftem es agir. You have to love the convert. There are lots of mitzvahs that aren't discussed in Shulchan Aruch, so the Magen Avraham collects them there. And here, he quotes this particular din as well. Okay, now most of us would say, I think, that it's an agadic statement. It's not a halachic statement. But the question is, what is the import here of this particular Gemara? And I actually wanted to just take a look at Rabbeinu Nissim Gom, who really sort of shifts the question a little bit, which is, why is it that Avram and Yaakov had their names changed, but Yitzchak didn't? So before you look at, don't cheat yet. I asked my wife this question, and if you had asked me, I probably would have been totally stumped as well. Rabbeinu Nissim Gom points out that there are four individuals in Tanakh who God gave them their name.
Yeah.
Who are the four individuals? So once we start this discussion, it's easy to get one. Go without looking. Who was given their name? Which I said wrong. Who was given their name before birth, I believe, before they were born?
We're not going to say Adam Arishan.
No, that was Biyom Hibaram on the day he created him.
Okay.
So the first one is Yitzchak. Who else?
Well, Shmuel or Shimshon?
Nope. Their names were not given before.
No, Shimshon is after.
Shmuel is after too. Hannah named him that. Kimei Hashem.
Right, right. What about?
There's one that everybody should know. Marshall?
Kenneth.
Ishmael?
Kenneth. I'm going with Kenneth. Kenneth, that's my answer.
Very nice. Okay. I won't tell you, Marshall, what I was almost named. But that wasn't it.
Yishmael.
The other two are not as obvious, and one of them might be a little bit debatable. But one of them is Shlomo HaMelech, but I think his name he was given was Yedidia. And then the other one, which is a little tricky, was Yoshiah HaMelech. The reason that's tricky is because in Malachim Aleph, I believe Perek Yodalid, when Yeravam, who was the first king of the north, he had built his Mizbeach and he built his golden calves in the northern kingdom. And the prophet from Judea came to tell him that in the future, he said, Hine vein nolad leves David, Yoshiyahu Shemo, that there will be a king born to Beis David at some future time. His name is Josiah, it's Yoshio, and he's going to slaughter the Kamei Habamos on these altars and burn human bones there to defile it. Now, the question is whether or not when the Navi gave this pronouncement, did he say Yoshiyahu Shemo? Now, remember, who wrote Sefer Malachim, presumably from the beginning to end? Who published it, put it together? Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Yirmiyahu already lived after Yoshiyahu was born and had done what he did. So it's possible that Yirmiyahu put in, as we would call a gloss, he added Yoshiyahu Shemo so that the reader would know who it was. You don't necessarily know that that was in the original text. And in fact, if it was in the original text, you do have to ask yourself the question, which is, if the text was there, did Yoshiyahu read the text before he did it? And the answer is, we know he didn't. If he had read the text and then he did what he did, we would call it a self-fulfilling prophecy. But anyway, so nonetheless, Rav Nissen Gaon says that those are the four individuals whose name was given before birth. Now, I haven't scanned my brain to see, is there anybody else? But I trust that he, even though his primary province was probably Toshva Peh, he probably knew, I'm sure he knew Tanakh much better than I do. So I'm going to trust him in that. But it begs the question, why is it that Yitzchak's name wasn't changed? And the answer that he gives is because God gave Yitzchak his name. That's why his name wasn't changed. Certainly wasn't changed by God. The question is, why? What's going on here? And I think I want to just suggest, and here you'll allow me for the sermon, and Rabbi Lookstein will grade me on this, at least on the thought, not the presentation, which is that when children are born, we give them names. We give them names because names often, hopefully, embody aspirations and hopes that we have for them. But the truth is, we never know what our children are, what they'll be like when they grow up. We never know whether they'll affect be mekayim their shame. In the case of Avram and in the case of Yaakov, their parents, Terach and Yitzchak, gave them names which represented whatever their hopes, their aspirations were. But it turned out that, in fact, those were not who they were destined to be. Avram wasn't destined to be only Av La'aram. He was destined to be Av Hamon Goyim, Av L'chol Olam, the patriarch for the entire world. Yaakov, at least what Yitzchak saw when he came out, was a slippery fellow. He was grabbing at his brother's heel. He was always trying to get a step ahead. And that was Yaakov's character for a long time. But ultimately, Yaakov's destiny was not to be Akov, was not to be crooked. It was to be Yashar Yisrael. And therefore, when we name our children, we have aspirations, but we don't really know what's going to be. And that's why the fathers who named Avram, who named Yaakov, well, they were wrong about what their children were going to be. They became something else. But when God gives the child his name before, whatever the meaning of Yitzchak is, whatever the aspirations of Yitzchak are, so there's never going to need for a change of name because God knows exactly what's going to be. God knows who our children are going to be when they're born. We have hopes for them, but sometimes our children are their own personalities, their own characters,
and they chart their own path in life. And sometimes the name we chose for them in our hopes are not their choices, and that's not always the bad thing. Sometimes our children surprise us, and they go beyond what we ever would have expected for them. But I think that that is, I think the underlying theme of the Gemara is the renaming, is that to call Avraham Avram is to in effect denigrate his legacy, is to curtail or to narrow what his legacy could be. And therefore, it's inappropriate, it's effective bizayon and or misinterpretation of the message of who Avram was to refer to him as Avram. And the same thing would be true, although there may not be a prohibition for whatever reason, to refer to Yisrael as Yaakov as well, is to misunderstand what Yisrael's mission was ultimately in his life.
What do we do about Peleg?
So the pshat, firstly, that wasn't.
Is it Ruach HaKodesh?
What? It wasn't before he was born. And the pshat in the pasuk, by the way, and not for now, pshat in that pasuk is, and I can prove it on a pshat level from the genealogies in Perek Yud Aleph, from the grammar, pshat in that pasuk is the palaga already happened. That's why he named that. But even if you want to stick with the medrash, that Aver was a Navi in this regard, he named him after he was born, not before he was born. Okay. Any questions?
Rabbi, so the in the Mishnah, the Chachamim hold, are we reading the Mishnah that the Chachamim agree that there's a mitzvah of Yitzias, a Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim at night? Presumably.
No.
They don't.
There is no, according, we will see in the second parak, not so long from now, that in Eretz Yisrael, it seems they didn't hold that way. In Eretz Yisrael, what they would do in Eretz Yisrael was Vayomer Hashem Moshe Lemor, Daber Bnei Yisrael Matar Lehem, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, and then they wouldn't even go to Emes Emuna. They said some other piece to lead. It's not clear if what they had of Yitzias Mitzrayim at night.
So why do we paskin like? So we how did it come to pass that we paskin like Ben Zoma because Rabbi Elazar Ben Azariah said so, or?
The answer, firstly, you're making an assumption that al pidin we do. The answer would be if we really do, because I mentioned it at the beginning of the talk at the Mishnah, the Rush and the Rift don't actually quote Pasuk.
But the Rambam does.
The Rambam does, but nowhere in Shulchan Aruch does it actually quote the Din. So I'm not really sure. Now, I think we assume you're supposed to do it. Yes. The reason we'll paskin, like with Lazar Mazari, is number one, the Mishnah opens with almost a stam statement, Maskin Yitzias Mitzrayim Leilus. You'll note that we don't quote that part in the Haggadah. Mm-hmm. Number two, the Amoraim on, I think, Daf Yudalit Amid Beis, will assume that in Babel they did as well, that they seem to have held that you have to be, that maybe, not 100% clear, may have held that you have to be Maskin Yitzias Mitzrayim Leilus. But you're right. With the Machlokas, the Chacham Rav Elazar ben Azariah alone, we might not have reached that conclusion. We might have said that there is a mitzvah, again, whatever this, I'll put it in quotes, mitzvah zechir tzis mitzvahim, but it's only during the day, only once a day. It doesn't have to be day and night. That's what the position of the Chachamim is.
Rabbi Weider?
Yes.
If Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is not actually 70 years old, so what does he mean by saying if he's only 18 years old, so what's so...
You can't ask me, Kat.
Usual to
you
say
can
that.
Ask me, cautious, Sam, from a medrash. I'm going to give you a medrashic answer. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was so precocious from the time he was seven. He was hoping there would be a Tzias Mitzrayim Balelos. And, you know, to a seven-year-old, 11 years is like forever. Right, age 18 when you're 7 years old is huge. So if you're gonna ask me a kasha from the medrash, I'm gonna respond with the midrashic answer. That's not pshat. Pshat is he was about 70 years old. He had waited. You're correct. He had waited a lifetime for this, and finally someone came forward with a source, you know, and proved it. So yeah.
Can I add to your explanation of what God said to Abraham? Sarai ishtecha lo tikras shema. Sarai ki Sarosh Shema. So Rav Soloveitchik explained it that what do you mean ki Sarosh Shema? Nobody changed her name. When was her name changed? So the Rav said her name was changed the moment that Avram's name was changed to Avraham, because the covenant is made with two people. And so God changed Avraham's name when he changed it, and automatically Sarah's name was changed then, because again, the covenantal personality is a dual personality.
I don't think this is very nice. Whenever the Rav said drush, it was always beautiful. So,
and the two hays would have to come from the yud, so it had to come out of Sarai. So to give the hay to Avraham, it would have already had come out of Sarai. Another midrashic answer.
Okay.
Is there any other precedent of rabbis talking about how old they are in the Gemara? I mean, they probably didn't celebrate birthdays, so he probably didn't know how old he was exactly.
Paro did.
You may be partially right. I can't think of an. I mean, the Gemara certainly does identify ages, although those may be approximate ages, like you know, Rabba versus two people from Beis Eli. One of them did chesed, one of them only learned, one died at 40, one died at 60. You do have, but the idea, I mean, you have celebrations of birthdays of kings in the Mishnah of Avodah Zarah, but you're right. I suspect that people had, they did definitely had a sense of how old they were. Birth dates, you know, a specific day of the year, I suspect less so. But you're probably right, because it's not just, you don't have to go back to the time of Chazal. Europeans, you know, in the previous century, in the 20th century, lots of Europeans, you know, age was approximate within a couple of years. Some people even deliberately changed their age because it was, you know, because in many, many Jews were born where you didn't have birth certificates. So it certainly makes sense to say approximate because people didn't record their exact age.
Okay. A question going back to maybe last week's shiur on bending at Baruch. Okay, Baruch, you bend the knee. Atah, you bend your body. And Hashem, because Hashem's okay prufim, you rise. Now, the question has always bothered me. When do you rise? Do you rise before, which is actually what I've been doing basically all my life? Or do you follow Hashem's okay prufim? As you're saying the name of Hashem, you rise. Intuitively, I felt you should be already upright when you say the word Hashem. But I looked it up. I couldn't find anywhere anybody who talked about it. But if you take the pasuk literally, Hashem zokef fufim, it would seem that Hashem is enabling you to straighten up. I'm looking at you're shaking your head. You're assuming, I think, also that
you're up before Hashem. So the truth is, I'll have to see if I can find. Last week, because of my discussion with Marshall, I went and I sent him the makar. Surprisingly, the idea that you don't bow at the knees by modem is not well sourced. The Mishnah Berurah quotes it from the Achronim. It doesn't. I don't think it has early roots, but at least that I can find. Now, he says it explicitly, the Mishnah Berurah. And he's the only one I found that, again, there may be a Zachronim he quotes, the Aruch Shulchan doesn't say anything. Mishnah Berurah is explicit that as opposed to Baruch Atah Hashem, by Modim, you go down straight and you say, okay, B'Shem. I assume also, like you do, that you get up before Hashem, but I guess I'll have to go hunting to see if I can find anything more on that.
In the Koran, it's explicit.
Koran is not a source.
Right.
Rabbi Sachs went through it, though. So he was pretty explicit, clearly saying it. As opposed to Artscroll, which is not clear.
Because he knows what Minog Yisrael is.
I guess.
Oh, right.
But it's like Kaddish when I...
That it's a question in order to...
It's like when I ask you about Kaddish, the makar for your feet together, and it basically doesn't exist.
Right. So... I have to see if I can find at least the question explicitly addressed about before or during Hashem.
There is an inyan on Baruch Hu to stay down for the whole thing.
Well, it's not clear that you should have Baruch Hu at all, but...
Right.
I think it makes no sense. Again, by Baruch Hu also, you should have to... I always assume you have to be up before Shem Hashem.
Right? I thought so also, but there was a makar that you could stay down for the whole thing.
Okay.
I don't remember where it was.
All right.
May not be Luchadeos, though.
Can I read it?
Yes.
I came across a source that says that not a single rabbi in the Talmud is named Abraham, Yisrael, Moshe, David, or Shlomo.
It's interesting why those biblical names weren't chosen. I have no idea, but yes.
And they are named Yishmael.
No, there is one named Yishmael.
I said they are named Yishmael.
Yeah, I mean, I think only one. There's a Tosfos in Yoma about that, but all right. Good.
You don't have a chatzal.
I'm just posting the link again for COVID vaccine.